Thank you for doing it. So this class is on also bounded rationality, like last time. We will be looking at problems of pure Nash equilibrium and one way to slightly weaken the condition of pure Nash equilibrium to get something that may explain more behaviors. Because the point of the equilibrium in games is to predict what is the behavior of the players. So there are a few notes there. It's just the notation. I can also write it down, but I didn't want to use space. And there are a few things, and of course it's trivial, but there is strict preference over actions. These are the greater or equal. There are action profiles. So there is strict preference for each player. And at some point we're going to use a strict preference over global action profiles. And that means that instead of going to the numerical side, it's just going to be, I show you two profiles and you tell me which one you like best. For each player, you only need to be able to compare given action profile, actions for every other player, which of these two actions will you prefer in that context? So a very kind of local preference. There are some simplifications that I'm doing, like every player has the same number of actions, the preferences are strict, everything generalizes. This paper that I'm going to talk about is recent, so it was published, or put in archive, actually it's not published, 2-3 months ago. The computational complexity of computing this new Nash equilibrium concept is being worked out. It will be or should be PLS complete for what matters. Yeah, that's the gist of it. And the people driving the research comes between mathematical game theory and economy. So there are a few motivating gains that should tell you Nash equilibrium doesn't give the complete prediction power that we would like to have. There are two games. One is going to be Traveler's Dilemma, not Prisoner's Dilemma, but Traveler's. And the other is 1120 games. So the numbers doesn't matter. But in one, in the Traveler's Dilemma, there's a pure Nash equilibrium that is not what will happen in reality. We know many games like that. In the other, in the 1120 game, there is no pure Nash equilibrium. There is a mix. And when you go to experiments, people play actions which are fairly in the support of the mixed Nash equilibrium, but the mixed Nash equilibrium puts also mass in things, actions that players do not take. So what are these games? Traveler's Dilemma. Essen and Ali, right? Essen and Ali are two people, and they went for a trip to Chile. And they bought some handmade toy. They actually bought the same handmade toy because they went together. The thing is that it was made of a ceramic. So they got to the plane back to Austria, coming to share the same toy. Come here. It's broken. But it was not their fault. It was fault of the airline. So the airline comes in and says, okay, don't worry. We'll pay you back. Say, ah, but I don't care about money. I care about the toy. Yeah, yeah, but we will just pay you back. Now, instead of you naming your price, that would be like as high as one, we will do the following. This is a toy, so it cannot cost more than 100 euros. Okay, fair. And I have both of you. So both of you go to separate rooms, write a number in a paper and give it to me. So at the same time, no communication. And I will pay the minimum of both, basically, with a catch. So I don't want you to both, like, I don't want you to lie. I will incentivize you to tell the truth. So I think that you always want to inflate the price. So I will pay the minimum of all numbers to both, but I will give the price to the one that gives the minimum number. Meaning I will transfer 2 euros from one to the other. Example. Esan says 30, Ali says 50. What will I pay? I will pay 30-30. But I will transfer 2 from Ali to Esan, meaning I will pay 28-32. Fair enough? So they can say only numbers between 2 and 100. You put a limit and lower limit. What happens in the game? What will you say? And in this situation, this is the kind of prisoner's dilemma that you want to get money. What is the rationale? Will you say 2? No, right? That's clear. Okay, you will not say 2. If you say 100 and the other, you think, oh, maybe they say 100. Well, you can get a bit more by saying 99. Right? So.
You should say 100.
If you start eliminating dominated actions, you will end up with the only action being rationalizable, meaning after the process of action elimination, is saying 2. Because you want to undercut whatever the other says, you want to say one number below what the other says to get this extra 2. So there are 100 actions, 2 players. They just want to get money. And game theory says, look, this game is amazing. It has a unique, pure Nash equilibrium. This is what will happen. And the unique, pure Nash equilibrium is both say 2.
What happens if both say 1?
The same. I will pay the same to both. So if both say 100, both get 100.
We also have this upper bound.
Yeah, upper bound of 100, lower bound of 2. No, because if I know that you will say 100, I can get 101 by saying 99. And that you can go with a million. So the thing is, if you just go blind, I have a game, pure Nash equilibrium, it's great, it's unique. Both will say 2. That's not a good prediction. So we want to weaken somehow Nash equilibrium to get something more real. There is a second game. We say, that's fine. Maybe if there is a mix in Nash equilibrium, other things could happen. So the other game is very similar. You say a number between 11 and 20. 11, 20 game. By the way, these games are famous, of course, for these reasons. You say a number between 11 and 20, and Ali also says at the same time between 11 and 20. And I will pay what you claim. There is one bonus, only more money. If you say exactly one less than Ali, I pay you 20 more. That's it. You can both say 20 and you get 20. In this case, there is no pure Nash equilibrium. There is one unique mixed Nash equilibrium. The game is symmetric, both got the same thing. And the support of this mixed Nash equilibrium is with numbers between 15 and 20. So you play with some probability 15, other 16, and so on. With 25 and 25% probability, you play 15 and 16. Now, since the number is 20, people wanted to evaluate how good of a prediction is this mix at Nash equilibrium. And the very basic is actions in the support of the mixed Nash equilibrium should be played. What happens in these experiments is that 90% of the people play only actions from 17, 18, 19, 20. They don't play 15, 16. Okay. So that was the observation. It's true. Maybe the Nash equilibrium is not that bad, not that far from reality. And the other thing is in this game that if you go through the process of strategy elimination, weakly dominated strategies, there's no weakly dominated action. So everything is rationalizable. It ends up, all actions remain. And we will see if this new concept of equilibrium, which is called satisfying equilibrium, has something to say in this game. Any questions about the two examples? So, let me show you a game of the games that I will try. This is going to be a game which has two players and three actions. Okay. What do I have to give you to describe this game for what matters to me? For the role player, I have to put the role player in each of the possible scenarios. So each of the actions of every other player. So if the common player does left, what are my rewards? Or what are my preferences? What is my top action, second top, third one? So let me see. I say 1, 2, 3. So these are just ranking. What do they prefer? Lower is better. Top, second level, third. And I have to say the same thing for the role player. So for the role player, for the column player, every action on every other player, meaning the role, what is their preference? 3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2. Because they have numbers, in this case, the difference, if you go to the quantitative setting, the difference between the preferred action and the second preferred action could be huge. But we're just looking at ranking. What is your top and your second top? So that's the setting. Now, is there a pure Nash equilibrium in this game? Try all the profiles, but Let's start. Imagine that you kind of this central role seems like a good action. Right, is it top action in three scenarios and is the second top action in the third scenario? So what happens if role player plays central? Then column player plays left because that's their preferred action. Given that you're left, you prefer top, and given that you're top, you go center. What's your center? You go also center. So there's a loop. There's a cycle. There's a cycle on the best response dynamic. But there's no pure Nash equilibrium. Now, let's do one slight generalization of best response dynamic. You don't have to best respond. You can choose the second best tool. So, if we look at this stop center. So if the common player plays stop, they choosing center, they are happy. They are playing top action. Given that the common player plays center, the role player is kind of happy. It's satisfied because they play the second best option. This is going to be a 2-1 satisfying equilibrium. And that's the whole definition of relaxation of Nash equilibrium. So let me slightly define. Remember, for each player, there's a preference, which you take all the actions and each scenario possible, and you map it to a number. You rank all the actions. Now, what is the rank of player I in this action profile according to their preference? It's just, well, basically the ranking that they are giving, just writing in a slightly more general form, you could say this function apply A, or you could say instead 1 plus the set of actions such that they are preferred. So just the ranking. And a profile is a satisfying minimum if for every player the rank I action according to their preference is, so K is a vector of how many preferences we allow to each player, or just one of these. Each player is choosing something among their K I top choices. What are the nice things about this? Before going back to the examples, the most important result is that if you take all games, these games defined by local preference, there are finitely many ones you fix N and M. So you can actually fix N and M, and you can count how many of these games have a pure Nash equivalent. Maybe 50% of them, maybe 60, maybe 100. Not 100 for every N. You see this? Doesn't have a pure Nash equivalent. You could take some limits. What happens when the number of players go to infinity? And you could see the fraction of numbers that have a pure Nash equivalent. You can show, or XM, fixed number of actions, the portion of these games that have a pure Nash equilibrium is 1 minus 1 over E, 67%. So even when the game is very large, a big portion of games do not have a pure Nash equilibrium. This concept, you could say, let me take a vector that is 2 in one coordinate and 1 in everything else. So it's almost Nash equilibrium. I'm just allowing one player to choose between their top two options. The result says the portion of games when n goes to infinity, and also when actions go to infinity, but we will not see that. The portion of games when n goes to infinity that have a 2-1 satisfies the equilibrium is 1, 100%. So asymptotically, almost all games have a 2-1 satisfies the equilibrium. You can put more players by putting more ones. So almost Nash equilibrium, there's only one player, and then you get almost all games. Of course, for every N and M, there will be examples where you don't have it. It's fine. So we will also see sufficient conditions to get this K-satisfying equilibrium. Good. So that's the biggest result on the satisfying equilibrium. Let's just rewind a bit and look at the what happens in the games that I presented before. So in the Traveler's Dilemma, you choose between 2 and 100. So if both say 100, what kind of equilibrium is this? Are they choosing their top action? No, because they can go and say 99. That's why the only pure Nash equilibrium was 2-2. But is, given that the other says 100, is 100 my second best? Yeah, I'd say 99. Or second best, I would say also 100. Given that the other player says 15, what is my best option? 49. What is my second best option? 50. If the other says 50, you say 50. That's also a second best option. and so on. So there are more, but you see that the whole diagonal playing the same number is also a 2-2 satisfying equilibrium. And as an equilibrium, if you tell the strategy to the other, then the other player will still not want to deviate. You can announce, I will play 100, and you instead of playing 99, you're too satisfied and you play 100. That's fine. That is still what we consider an equilibrium. Good. With saying 97 and 100, it's not a too satisfying thing equilibrium. It's like a 4 satisfying equilibrium because the difference between 97 and 100. So if you wanted to play more, more empirically, you will say, well, people are, it's not that they need only second best, between the top 5, it's fine. And that will accommodate more, real life situations. So, and this is what happens in the other game. The other game is 11-20. In the 11-20 game, you say a number between 11 and 20, you get the, what you claim. And if you say one less than the other, you get a bonus of 20. The only mixed Nash equilibrium are probability distributions between 50 and 20 with Hallmaster. What is a too satisfying group? So there is no pure Nash group. Is there, in this game, there could be not too satisfying group. But when both of you, when the other says 20, what is your second best action? You could say 19. That's my first action. And given that the other says 19, he's saying 20, your second best action. Yes. So the profile 2019 is a 2-2 satisfying equilibrium. Actually, it's a 1-2 satisfying equilibrium. One is playing the top action, and the other is playing the second top action. So 2020 is also a 2-2 satisfying equilibrium. And when you allow more, choose between the top 5, you get the top numbers. Each player can play 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, and they are choosing between their top 5 actions. So if in reality players are playing this strategy, mixed Nash equilibrium between 15 and 20, you would say, well, if you allow them to choose between their first 5 actions, that's a satisfying equilibrium. And we don't care about the probabilities, we're just playing pure. So that's how this satisfying equilibrium is solving or answering what happens in these games. Any questions so far?
So if I know that there are other players who will play on the top 5.
Yeah.
And you can play 15.
Yeah.
My top 1 is 14.
Yes.
I can from my source, it's a response.
So you can best, you can top 2 response or top 5 response. You are satisfied with answering something which is not necessarily your best.
Yeah,
your second best.
And I want to reply something that is definitely inside itself, even though.
This is important because then we will see into the top K response dynamic. Good. So, since the last theoretical result is all asymptotically, almost all games have a 2-1 satisfying equilibrium, I will not show you that result. I will show you something simple. And something simpler is the portion of games that have a pure Nash equilibrium. Okay. So, statement is the following. If you consider the portion of games with M players and M actions per player, that has a pure Nash equilibrium, so I want to see this in the limit as N goes to infinity. N goes to infinity. This goes to not one. A big portion of games, but even when there are many, many players, they do not have a pure Nash equilibrium. And obviously. Now, there is a this is the most technical thing that I will show. There is a nice probability theorem, if you want, that relates the sum of Bernoulli variables. If they were independent, then they would behave like a Poisson. They are not independent, and how far are this sum of Bernoulli variables from a Poisson? Very general, technical demo. Maybe you use it at some point. I will try to state it in not the most general form, but kind of quite useful. The theorem is of Jan Stein. Hope you haven't seen it before. And says, take A, some set. So just here, A is some set. Take a collection of brand new variables, where the expectation of each brand new variable, I will just define it as I need one more thing, which is for all A, define CA, this is such, where the variable B, this Bernoulli variable, is independent to everything else. So B A prime with A prime in A but not. These are the correlated variables with A. So this can be relaxed. If you actually want dependence with everyone, you can. But the expression is more complicated. So now, what will you like? You want to study the sum of these Bernoulli variables. And you want to study how far are they from the Poisson. The expected Poisson should have a parameter like the sum of the probabilities. Okay. This is the setting. We have the conclusion is the total variation distance. I will write it explicitly.
the probability that this M, the sum of Berlin variables, is in some event, also some event, is very similar to the probability that the Poisson also falls in that event. And how similar it is? Well, it's less than two numbers. Beta 1 and beta 2. What are beta 1 and beta 2? Beta 1 is the sum of the products of probabilities only between pairs for all A and for all A prime in the correlated. We have PA and PA. Some of the multiplication of the expectations. Beta 2, somewhere it has to appear, is the expectation of the products, or like the correlation. We have a very similar sum. Just make A prime different than A, and consider the expectation of the multiplication. Again, we have some collection of Bernoulli variables, all possibly different with some correlation. For this class, we have a set where you can kind of bound the correlations. If you take out that set, then you are independent from the rest. That for each of the variables. Take the sum and take the Poisson of the sum of the probabilities. They differ in not that much, and that not that much is quantified by the sum of products and the sum of the expectation of products. So if they are all dependent on everyone, right? CA is the whole thing.
They're all independent.
They are all independent, right? Okay, so they are all independent. Yeah. So CA is empty. Or CA is A, just single thing. You get something here, but you get nothing here. But actually the probabilities are the same. And they behave like the same. They are all independent. So it's slightly not tight. In beta I, you have some sum, which is a cardinality of A times the product of PA squared. So this has appeared in the study in games in theory before. And we will actually see that the proof of the statement above is quite easy. So there's one technical thing. I don't want to be too technical about it, which is we will choose a game at random. And I just want to define well how you choose it. So we'll define G as a random game that follows the uniform over all groups. So for all players, and also for all partial profiles. How do you define the game? Well, you choose a permutation at random. given each scenario, I think that you have to give the preference list for that failure overall layer actions on that scenario to the abandon. That defines Q, which is from uniform abandon among all the games.
Great.
So now, for a vector profile, define the following Bernoulli bar. I want to be able to count how many games have an Ashton equilibrium. And I will have a sum of Bernoullis. So if the sum of Bernoullis counts how many Nash equilibriums there are, I could take an event like n greater equals 1. So that's it. This will be 1 if A is a pure Nash equilibrium in the run game G. Now that the expectation of PA, we call PA, is so A, the action profile is fixed. The action profile is A is fixed. Okay.
So here it is PA.
Yeah.
A is a random vector?
No, this is fixed.
Yeah.
So this is a construction of G.
So you're saying that picking the game and forming a random among all the possible games equal to this procedure randomly?
Yeah, this random procedure generates a game. Around the
game
that actually behaves uniformly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why do I want his procedure in particular and not just take any game uniformly random? For example, this. I want to be able to actually compute what is the expectation of this Bernoulli bar. So, when a given profile is going to be the or a pure Nash equilibrium for each player, given whatever they the others play, it has to be the top one, and this is chosen uniformly at random. So for player I, this will happen 1/m, and this has to happen for every player. So the expectation that a given action profile is a pure Nash equilibrium is 1/m to the n. And this is because of the way of G was constructed. If you construct it in another way, the correlation between the variables could be also very different. It also happens that the correlated set on this is if it's all the is all the actions profile which have everything but one coordinate in common. And what you have is that the size of this n times n, so it's not that big. And lastly, because it will appear here, what you also have is a you have that two profiles which are related cannot be pure hash at the same time. One of them has to be the largest. That's why we took strict preferences. So A's, the actual profile has issues. So if you take another A, which is correlated as in it has everything in common but one coordinate, then for that player, either A or A prime was the pure Nash equilibrium. So it cannot be that both at the same time are the pure Nash equilibrium. Right. So how far is the number of pure Nash equilibrium from A Poisson? Well, if you take the event 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, this probability will be bounded, this difference of probabilities will be bounded by beta 1 and beta 2. Beta 2 is 0. Beta 1 is this sum. So, beta 1 will be, well, I'm summing PAs, they are all the same. So I'm summing over A, I'm summing so over the cardinality, over the correlated. So M has, so A has M to the N, and A times N. And then you have PA and PA prime, which is 1 over M. They have cardinality of A, cardinality of CA, and PA times PA prime. How much this is? M divided by M to NH. When you take N to infinity, this tends. Meaning that want the probability that the number of Nash equilibriums is probably equal to 1. There's no way. M to the N, which is the cardinality of A. This is the cardinality of A. This is cardinality of C, A. This is PA times PA. So the probability of the Nash, there is some Nash equilibrium minus the Poisson on the Poisson is greater equal to 1, which is 1 minus 1 over 8, this converges to 0. Exponentially. That proves the statement.
Now, there are two results. So this is the number of pure Nash equilibrium. What about the satisfying equilibrium? We said that if we change a 2-1 satisfying equilibrium, then the limit is not 1 minus 1 over 8, but it's 1.
That's what they claim as the main result. And as you see, the proof has, or the proof of the previous assignment also has a speed of convergence, a relationship between the number of Nash equilibriums and a Poisson. And this is also true for satisfying equilibrium. So you can, what is the portion of games where there is two satisfying equilibriums? More than one. There's three men. And for any fixed number, the portion of games that have alpha number of
satisfying equilibrium. Two one satisfies an equilibrium, also tends to one. There is slightly more, I will not write it, just for you to know, what kind of results this Chernstein method allows you to say.
Just constant, or can it be related?
Yeah, it can be related to n. Right, so,
So
has not one but many, and you want to relate that to n.
Okay.
Yeah. So the question.
Probability is one.
So all of n will still converge to one. Linearly. So this is G as all of n little low of n 2-1 satisfies an equilibrium that is still converges for every fixed function O of n, little low. Yeah. There is one more result that I find nice. Is it says the game has some satisfying equilibrium. If you want to focus on one player, what are the portions of games where player one has to play the top two actions? Does that also converge to one? And the answer is no. What was the question?
It's very symmetric. There are a lot of games. And that's why the portion of games, there are also some games which do not have a 2-1 satisfying equilibrium. So this says if the game has some 2-1 satisfying equilibrium, then you count it. But if you count less games, if you count only those games where, and you count the number of games such that G has a 2 for player 1, for any fixed type, 2 for player 1, then best response for everyone else. Let's face it. So count those. The portion. And just in time, it tells to the probability of two 80%. Above 80%. There's not one. There's a lot of symmetry. You're counting less games. You could expect one, but it's not one. And you can do this for any set, any fixed set of players. So, in short, Chernstein method, short proof, and allows you to actually say a lot about distribution of the number of Nash equivalents, or satisfying equivalent. Good. There's one more, let's continue. Or any questions that you have? So, with Lenka we saw potential gains. And
There is also, like Blanke said, if you have a potential gain, then there is a pure Nash equilibrium, which is the minimum of the potential.
So take a global preference. This global preference doesn't have a player, takes any action profile, and we use a ranking. So this is subject.
Now, a potential gain
will have this function being related to the preference of each of the players. And it should be like equal. Right? Or the difference should be the same as the difference here. The way that I'm going to define it is the following. So, let me take approximate.
It's one in which
the rank of player I under preference is related to the rank of player I of global preference. Since it's approximately his difference is not going to be larger than AA. And this is for all action. So when you want to compute the rank of player I, you can also compute it on the global preference. And you have a KI approximation. So let's see, if K is just one. One everywhere. The difference is less than one, so they are the same, these are natural numbers, ranks. So the rank of player I on the global preference is the same as the rank on their preference. This is the potential gain. If you allow for higher k, you use only one k. And the statement says every k approximate potential gain has a k satisfying. And the proof, which we're not going to write it, is so this is a global preference. Take the
minimum on the one that is assigned the number of one, the top action profile.
Now, the rank of I on that action profile in the global preference is 1. It's the best one on the global preference. Then, on their own preference, is less or equal to KI. So, this means that according to their preference, this action profile is actually choosing one of their KI top actions. This is for every player on the action profile that the global preference ranks first.
So if you are a K approximate potential gain, you take this top priority according to the global preference, and that leads to a K satisfying. So that's a class of games that have a K satisfying equilibrium.
Most of the games have like case at a 2-1 satisfying equilibrium.
And I want to go to questions first. Questions first. No questions. No
questions. Yeah,
I'm not kidding.
What is fine if you have less than
10 minutes? Yeah, I have less than 10 minutes. So I just want to tell you there is a learning dynamic. The learning dynamic, first the proof uses results from before, so I'm not going to prove it. And it's defined in such a way that players, if they are in a case satisfying equilibrium, there is a positive probability that they remain on this case satisfying equilibrium forever. If they are not, then at some point someone will try to apply the top K best response. That's what you will expect. And the dynamic is not just everybody do top K response and then you converge. It's slightly more technical. With some probability, you come and do actually this top K response. And the proof uses various results on Nash equilibrium. And the proof is also kind of a heavy reduction to, again, when you're looking for a pure Nash equilibrium. But what I wanted to say about this dynamic, although the proof is going to Nash equilibrium, is the dynamic is as follows. From time to time, you become active. If you become active for the first time, then you top K best response. And then you may go to sleep. If you become active, you become active with some positive probability. So each time. If you become active for the second time, you evaluate everything that has passed from the last time that you were active. You see the whole history, and if nothing changed, you're happy. You just top K response. If something changed, then you best top K response. Now, this dynamic... You look at the profile, you know the action profile of everyone, you know what you are playing, you know what everyone is playing. So you know what context you are? In the last situation. So you know what everyone was playing, and you just look at your actions, which one is in your top K. So this is a dynamic that will converge to a K-satisfying equilibrium in all the games that have it. And because most of the games have it, then it will converge to a K-satisfying equilibrium in most of the cases. That's the learning dynamic.
So
you
can have this.
So it's not part of this paper, but it's been worked out, and it's PLS complete. They are just different classes, so there should not be a hard problem in one of the classes. Yes. So PLS, yes. And even for K, as large as M halves. Because the larger the K, the more equilibriums you could find. In the number of players. Yes. It's a PLS complete as a problem when the input is you give the whole game, right?
Yeah. But what I'm trying to understand is regions along which
Yeah. Yeah, here you need the number of players.
Yeah, but in the example, you say that when I have 2 players computing a 2-satisfying equilibria,
you can check all action profiles, right?
Yeah, and in a particular result, if I guess support, because it's a very small support, right?
So these are pure actions, right?
Yeah,
there's no mix.
Yeah. One day can play, or else can play on the support two. Right?
They play pure actions, so no mixed.
No mixed.
No mixed. Everything here is for pure, so far.
If I would have taken a game, And from the game constructed is, and then.
So for example, a game with random pairs. Each action profile has a random pair. That's a game. And it will have all these strict things.
Is there, can there be a result of this form that, you know, two-player games where computing Nash equilibrium is hard?
Yeah.
Is actually very rare. You want to consider as most possible. Absolutely. Like, something.
So if the game has a pure Nash, it's easy because you could go through all the profiles.
Yeah.
Then you handle 1-1 array portion of the games.
Yeah, not all.
Not all. What happens in the others? If there is.
When I have two, it's almost all games which are. And computing these two is easy.
It's easy. It's quadratic. M squared.
Right? So it means that the class of games which are computing naturally is hard, is vanishing is small.
No. You made the jump from 2-1 satisficing to Nash. We don't know. We don't know.
It's complicated if you have a 2-1 satisfying. You have a misbehavior.
Yeah, no. No. Or not that I know of. No idea yet.
So you didn't change that.
Yeah.
Did you explain it in the paper or?
Being worked out and not published yet. So Papa Dreamich is working on it.
This paper is also?
No, this is Barry. Also. Two people from Oxford, Barry Pedelsky and Basil Arbush.
And this where?
More between economy and math. But, for example, it could be that one could use this to prove that the number of the portion of games that have a Nash equilibrium with support size at most 2
yeah.
is almost all games.
Yeah, that's it. I cannot show. If you show it.
Yeah, then you will be showing that most of the games are easy.
Right. Or when you show 2, you can do any constant.
Yeah.
From this technique, is it physically?
Yeah, or I don't know. We'll have to work the details, but you will define something indexed by two actions, not so many, and the size of A is not that big. The size of the correlated is also not that big, and the expectations are still small.
Yeah, maybe. I'm just trying to understand, like, class of games. Well, there is a Nash equilibrium small support.
Yeah.
And Theon already captures 1-1.
So the support of the distribution over the size of the support of Nash equilibrium in random games, it has been studied. And it's not small. it grows, but if I'm not mistaken, like a square root of n. N, I'm not sure. If you put, yeah. I don't know if that leads to different complexity. It was not as small the last time I knew it. This was even for, this was true for zero-sum games, so matrix games. You take random payoffs. Each entry is a Gaussian.
This number to be support size is present. What happens if you change the distribution?
So you can add correlation and it changes continuously. That's for sure. That also leads to the same result. No. The random matrix theory. So, the comment on a random game. This kind of, before 3 years ago, most of random games were random payoffs. With preference, there is a finite set of games.
Yeah.
In this finite set of games, I don't think it has been studied because the tools are different.
Can you just let me make a question? It's already
Yeah.
Is it some ordering method? Might be better.
Could be.
And even if I have the support argument to this spell, then.
Yeah.
If I get the support of one player, doesn't the problem be continued?
Yeah, because you solve the.
I'm just only considering this. Yes, simple, right?
Yeah.
Support of both of them are there.
Only one.
Yes, can you really see? Sir? So
I'm guessing one player or both players should not make a difference.
Yeah, I'm just curious. Can you really show this character? It's already something interesting there. And then one comes in there. What happens over here in terms of support? Just for two players. Because the hardest result is already for two players. Yeah, two players should be easier, example.